You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast, number 99.
Hi, this is Rod Murray. I'm glad to be back. Hope you had a great holiday. That was a clip from the well-known set of violin concertos, The Four Seasons by Vivaldi. We're into winter, so I thought I'd play the Allegro movement from Concerto No. 4 in G minor, also known as the Winter Concerto. It's performed by the American Baroque Orchestra and will be played in full at the end of my podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. As always, I'll post the links to all of the resources we discuss on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. Let's move on to my main topic today. It's my interview with John Corson. He is the CEO of Going On. As they say, Going On has developed an innovative academic social network platform enabling students, faculty, and administrators to more effectively connect, collaborate, and learn. So we'll be learning a bit more about how the company started and their beginnings at the University of Pennsylvania, its use as a messaging tool, and also ePortfolio, which is an interest of ours here these days, how it integrates with the LMS, and how their platform contrasts with Facebook, Twitter, Ning, and others. So without further ado, here's my interview with John. So John, thanks a lot for joining me today. And I'd like to hear a lot more about Going On. Why don't you tell my audience a little bit about your company and how it all got started?
Sure. Going On is a company focused on applying social technologies and social modalities to help increase engagement and streamline communication across universities. We started back in 2008. We were really at that time focused specifically on really more closely to the classroom and trying to understand how social technologies might advance learning management systems or what were then a time where people were getting a bit frustrated with their learning management systems. We've evolved from that into a more broad community platform for building different types of collaborative spaces that go beyond the course. And most recently, I've really found that the challenge for the universities is much more broader and really at its root is about communicating and connecting people across all aspects of the campus. And so it's been an interesting learning path as we've really started to understand what the role of an academic network can be inside higher education institutions.
What was the first time you thought your product would be a commercial product? Did you have some pilots going with some other institutions? How did that evolve?
Yeah, well, you know, our first release of our product was at University of Pennsylvania. And the challenge that they had there was that they were doing a lot of the School of Continuing Education specifically were trying to do courses where obviously they were dealing with a very disparate group of users and really did not feel like they had a way to replicate the on-campus or the in-class experience, and the learning management systems that they were using were not effectively engaging this type of distant learner. And one of the first places we started, as I mentioned, was building these social classrooms. And the social classrooms essentially brought some of the collaborative sharing dialogue interactive features such as blogging and wikis and podcasts and video sharing, more advanced discussion groups, kind of brought those to the forefront and took things like assessments and grade books and sort of moved those more to the background. And through just the way the functionality was displayed and the user experience, we found it created a much greater level of engagement. And as an example, we ended up teaching a course on positive psychology by a gentleman named Tal Ben-Shahara, who's one of the leading thinkers in the area of positive psychology. the reach of that particular subject was global. We ended up teaching this particular course, and I would really, you know, hesitate to even call it a course, but we offered this experience, if you will, to over 2,000 users from across 40 countries. It involved thousands of hours of high-definition video, but most importantly, resulted in literally thousands of unique posts, whether they were journal entries or blogs or contributions to discussions or online questions. The level of interaction was staggering. And when we finished, almost to a T, all of the participants that we had a chance to interview said that they had learned more from their interactions with their peers and cohorts than they did from the structured material. The other dimension that was really interesting was that Tao Benchihara, as the professor, you really saw what it looked like to move from that sage on the stage mentality to the facilitator mentality as he came into the community. And this was a 12-week sort of asynchronous course. He would come in at certain time frames, but he would also just drop in informally. And when he contributed to someone's blog post or commented on someone's comment, it really sort of ignited another level of excitement and conversation in the space. So it was really fascinating to watch that type of interaction. And that's really where we started. But as I mentioned, we've learned a lot and come a long way since then.
One thing that always comes up in my mind is the fact that some students, you know, want to keep their social life away from their academic life. I know that's how my daughter feels, who's in second year in college right now. And so having her faculty somehow interact with Facebook is not very palatable. So was that one of your, I guess, guiding principles, to have a sort of a separate social network that's separate from the personal one?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a real challenge at first, because when we first, going back 18 months or 2 years ago, when we first started working and talking to universities who were very early in their formulating their thinking about this, they had a sense, correctly, that all of their students are on Facebook and that they had to take advantage of the fact that they were all there. And we would actually get many, many people that we spoke with say, well, we're going to do that in Facebook. We felt, as you did, that that wasn't going to be palatable for either the faculty or the students, and that they didn't want to be friended by each other. And so, yes, the concept of an academic network, and specifically a private academic network that was branded to the institution and created that separation between your academic identity and activities and your personal social network was definitely very important. Tenet remains a very important tenet. And I think it's fair to say now that there's no schools that we talk to that have any interest in having their content or their interactions right up there next to some of the things that students are doing on Facebook. So that's turned out to be, in fact, the case.
I did peruse your website, and I saw mention of ePortfolios. Now, it's something that's we're very interested in here now at University of the Sciences, and I know there's so many offerings out there. You know, the LMS is not necessarily the place to put that. Is that something that is an extension to your going on product? Is it a separate product? Do you see that as a way for students to, you know, catalog their educational content?
Yeah, I do. I think that there's been a lot of questions about what ePortfolio is. There's been, quite honestly, a lot of false starts around getting ePortfolio standards put in place. And so I think there's really two fundamental parts to it. One starts with the network, and my sincere hope, because I have children who are in junior high, but my sincere hope is that when my children do go to school and they enter any university, they will be given a virtual ID into that university's academic network, and that network will help expose to them all of the most valuable resources that institution has to offer, including their peers and their cohorts. And so I think the first step is to get people into a network where they could really be leveraging and utilizing these resources. I think once you're in this network and you're using this network and you're using it for the types of interactions that go far beyond the confines of the course, and that could be for extracurricular and co-curricular activities, or it could be for broader aspects of your academic life. I think once you are in that network, then the network itself can provide a role in starting to understand who you are and build out your portfolio. And off of that, you can then do what we call curate your identity and curate the type of work that you're doing into something that's maybe a portfolio, maybe not by the pure definition of some of the e-portfolio standards, but something very close to LinkedIn, where you do have an academic identity, you do curate some of your best work, some of your best recommendations, and you do create a space that you can carry with you after you graduate. And I think that could be very powerful when you're applying for your first job or trying to move into graduate studies. I know when I graduated, I didn't have too much to show to my first employer or in the application process.
You know, one thing we're struggling with here, and a lot of schools are trying to leverage connection with the student through email, perhaps offering them continuing email as an alumnus. How would it work with going on if it's something that the school is paying for? Is there a mechanism for students to keep their account? How would that work?
Yeah, well, let me, if you don't mind, just sort of step back, and because you bring up a really interesting point, and then I'll come back and explain how you might make this portable. But, you know, you bring up a really great point. We were just down talking to Emory University, who is extremely successful in having created a internal network that is a academic network. It's built on much older technology, and we're talking to them about where they want to take that. But they get thousands and thousands and thousands of posts a month, and their network is really part of the academic experience at Emory. So when students leave Emory, they're very sad to leave not just their email, but to leave this LearnLink, this experience, or part of their identity. And so I think in the first level, it's, you know, as you mentioned, it's my sincere hope that email is kind of, you know, people are setting up Gmail accounts, having stuff forwarded to Gmail. The legacy of carrying your email with you after you graduate school, I think, will be replaced by, as you said, carrying with you this broader identity of your total experience in the school. And so I think that that is an interesting trend. You know, we're looking at collaborative spaces and networks replacing sort of simple email. And we've seen that with young kids who now use Facebook instead of email. And I think we'll see that in the academic sector as well. And to answer your question directly, we have really, at this point, would allow students to just continue to carry it forward. We don't have a monetization model in place. It is up to the university to decide whether they want to allow their students to keep their presence in the network, or at least presence into their own portfolio and profile in the network after they graduate, or whether they don't. Clearly, there is an opportunity either for schools to monetize that, which may or may not be attractive to them. But clearly, if you can keep them engaged in ownership of that academic identity for the first years that they graduate from school, you have a real opportunity to stay connected with your alumni and to, you know, have an opportunity to bring them back into other opportunities for engagement with the school, or perhaps even programs for continuing education.
And bugging them to donate to the school, of course. But I understand that it's a hosted environment, that you host everything for the institution. Is that right?
Yes.
Also, then, how are things like authentication handled? Do you integrate with the school's learning management system?
We do. Almost every implementation we've done has had several different types of integration points. One of the obviously more common ones is single sign-on, so that the student or the faculty can have a single point of authentication using either CAS or Shibboleth, or any of the other single sign-on standards that we support or that are common. The second level of integration, which is quite common, is that we're integrating into the student information system or into the learning management system to get information such as registration in a given community or basic profile information. And on that front, more and more so, we're seeing people use the IMS LTI standard, and Our goal is to fully support that or as our model for that level of integration.
What would you say about learning curve, especially for the faculty? One of my functions here is to train our faculty how to use all this technology. What training is required? Is it do you offer training? Is it something that they just learn by doing?
Yeah, I think that any successful web application today has to be easy enough to use that people can pick it up on their own. Obviously, offering communities of our own where people can go and get online tutorials or ask each other questions or access our support organization is a necessary and important part of our offering. But I think that most people expect the user experience to be simple enough that they can do 80-85% of what they need to simply by clicking around the screen. I would add, you know, that our platform is a very, very broad platform, and I was mentioning early on that some folks used it for initially for building social classrooms, but as we've evolved, we're becoming more and more of a sort of central communication infrastructure being run out of, you know, the office of the CIO or academic affairs or student affairs, and it's becoming really a tool for addressing a very fundamental challenge, which is how can I connect and communicate with a very distributed and disparate user group or constituency, some of which want to get messages and emails, some of which want to get SMS messages, some of which want to use a mobile app. So simply the way that you start thinking about how to connect the campus is perhaps, interestingly, what we're finding to be the most sort of compelling and first step in deploying this type of network.
That's interesting, yeah, because I know there are a lot of products out there for that sort of communication, so it didn't occur to me that that could actually replace that kind of a sort of dedicated, messaging tool.
Well, I think that, you know, where you'll see these dedicated messaging tools trying to go, for example, a lot of them started as an emergency response system and you can and are still used, but, you know, we think that student engagement and faculty engagement is equally something of urgent action. And so where you'll see some of these going is it's great if you can send a message, but can you link that message to a richer content management, richer collaboration, and into a network that provides meaningful connections? And so, you know, I'll give you an example. At the most basic level, if you were to set up our network, one of the first easiest things you can do that doesn't take much training at all is to set up a channel, which is kind of like a group. And so I could set up a channel for all first year international students, or maybe just for all first year students. If there's a seminar or a guest lecture, and I think it's useful for all first year psychology students to attend, and I can not just send a message, but I can actually post a blog, maybe a video teaser, the calendar event itself, publish that into our content engine, into the channel, if you will, and also tell the channel that I want to publish that out to all first-year psychology students. Let's say it's a psychology guest lecturer. So being able to set up that quick, easy way to get meaningful content out to the user is imperative to igniting the network. And from there, whether people choose to get that via a mobile app or via email or via our virtual commons, you can then decide to what degree they want to start to interact with that, share it, like it, comment on it, expand the levels of collaboration around that content. And then from there, drop down into maybe some collaborative spaces. So maybe it's something about a study group and you actually end up in the collaborative study group, or it's from a course and you end up back in the course space.
One question I have to ask is talking about mobile and connections. Do you have an iPad app?
Well, we do not. We have not released our iPad app, although it is in development and it's looking very good. We'll actually release our iPhone and Android applications first in February of next year. The iPad app, because of the way our interface works, you can pull it up in the native browser and it looks great. It renders well. But we will eventually do a full iPad app.
Most people these days know how social media sites like Facebook work. You know, you have your contacts, you have your discussion area. How would you distinguish yourself if you were comparing yourself to Facebook, you know, not including all the commercial aspects, but, you know, what makes your going on system different?
Well, there's a couple things. There's a interesting sort of paradigm shift that your listeners may be aware of, but is worth highlighting. And that is that there's really been a change in how people want to consume information. And when you think about it, it's quite obvious. But when you look back, even to when we started, the big applications that were coming up were MySpace and Ning and Facebook at the time. And it was a lot about, if you look at Ning and even MySpace, everyone was creating their own little profiles or sites. And Ning was about creating all these different social sites that you might go be a member of. And it was very reminiscent of a portal, if you would, sort of micro social portals, if you would. You were going to go to these different sites. And MySpace, you know, you started building your profiles, and then pretty soon they became very ugly because people could move stuff around. And so we had what we called the ugly MySpace phenomena. And then, you know, really where Facebook really hit it out of the park and where they really started to get their legs is they sort of said, no, we're going to give you one place. It's going to look basically the same for everyone. And the heart of it is going to be the activity stream. And it was that fundamental paradigm where now, instead of creating a bunch of destination sites, you were creating a central Facebook place, and all the information was being pushed to you in these activity streams that really helped define really the new paradigm of how people want to get information. And quickly behind that, Twitter came, and Twitter was another push modality where, again, I was subscribing, I was letting people know what I was interested in, or I was letting people know who else I was friends with. And based on that intelligence, or based on those settings, information that I cared about was being pushed to me. And so this is a really important fundamental paradigm in thinking about how to engage not just students, but also faculty. And it's one of the reasons why I think campuses are really starting to struggle with portals and what the role of their portals are in the campus, and more broadly, how they get information to students and faculty, because specifically of the things we've talked about, all being predicated on this push modality where tell me what I need to know, when I need to know it, in the way that I care about it, i.e. on my iPhone, in my Facebook page, in my LMS, et cetera, et cetera. And so what's unique about going on is that we provide that infrastructure, that common sort of activity stream management, push management architecture as a private network inside of the institution, so that we can find a way to start to sew together a lot of these different systems and a lot of these different information sources, and layer on top of that a push technology that is smart enough to send the message to the right people at the right time, and then let them experience it as they would like, be it through their, again, through their phone. If they do come to our full, our application, to the personal commons, which is their primary interface into everything that's going on across their institution, they will see something that looks a little bit like Facebook in the sense that it is activity streams, and they are filterable by things like connections, or by the communities that you're members of, or by the channels that you're subscribing to. But one thing that we found out that was really, really interesting is we had an opportunity to go down to a few of our customers and do user studies with both students and faculty and staff. And when we first showed some of the newer product offerings we have, and specifically around this intelligent activity streams, we had a lot of pictures and complexities in the stream, and it looked, quite frankly, it looked a lot like Facebook. And we got a really interesting reaction, and they said, it looks too much like Facebook. And we were surprised, because I had to spend a lot of time trying to make it look like Facebook, or at least trying to make it work like Facebook. I was initially taken back and, quite frankly, a little saddened. But as we sat there through the day and listened to them a little bit more closely, what we heard very clearly was that in your academic identity and in your academic network, the purpose of that network is highly, highly utilitarian. And what they care most about is getting the right information really fast in a way that's really easy to use. They don't want it to be encumbered by a lot of noise, and to them, noise manifested in the complexity of the interface. They make a real distinction, students do, between communication and socialization. And for them, Facebook is social. It's about, oh, I see Bob's going here, and do you know Sam? Is Sam going? Oh, look at what Sally's doing. That's pretty interesting. Look at these pictures. Communication is very much about, I want to get the latest information from the program that I'm a member of in a very succinct way, and know about whether there's an event that I care about. I want to get in, get out quickly, and I don't want the interface to be encumbered. So when we went back and simplified our interface and literally added a toggle that gave it something called Simple View, which ripped out a lot of the sort of artifacts and gave it in a more simplified, streamlined view of the activity stream and simplified navigation, we got drastically different sort of feedback. And so these are kind of the subtleties of really understanding how to communicate in an academic network versus a social network.
Well, listen, I think we're just about out of time. I want to really thank you for speaking with us today. Some of this might be a little hard to visualize since it's an audio-only podcast, but I'll let my audience know, have links to your website. And again, thanks a lot and best wishes for growing going on.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
I hope you enjoyed the interview and learned more about the advantages of social media and education. After our official interview, John and I continued with some lively discussion, so I'm planning to present another podcast with this bonus material, so stay tuned for that. So, please stay tuned for the last movement of the Winter Concerto by Vivaldi. Until next time, have a great week.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog, send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com, or leave audio feedback on his comment line at 610-616-2199. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company.